Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's season 8, episode 37. And the Steelers, Dave, 5-2. They get a win at home over the Cincinnati Bengals. A rather convincing win at 29-14. They come out of this, you know, maybe the story that we haven't talked much about all year long, just kind of casually mentioning it. They come out of another game here relatively injury-free. And with the loss, of course, of the Ravens loss in Minnesota, the Steelers winning the division game over the Bengals, the Browns being out of it already at this point of the season, the Steelers, I don't want to say wrapped up the AFC Central, the AFC North, but they certainly are in about as good a position as you could possibly hope for 7 weeks into the season.
Boy, you're talking about the AFC Central, and I was talking about
Dayton is both.
And I was talking about Mark Brunell the other day. What year is it? But I mean, it almost is right now, like the old AFC Central days, right? But good win yesterday. We'll obviously get into breaking that down. Who would have thought? 5-2 after the first seven. 7 weeks of the season.
Well, I think we did think, didn't we? I mean, this is kind of what we thought was going to happen this year.
Yeah, but I'm not sure either one of us would have thought 5-2 would have been enough to lead the AFC now at this point is what I'm getting at. I mean,
AFC. Yeah, I'm with you.
You know, we hit 21, but we hit 21 the hard way. You know,
It drew into it with five cards.
Right. I mean, I would have bet you. What kind of odds would we have given each other that the two losses that they have 7 games into the season would have been against the Bears and the Jaguars, you know? But hey, look, we've seen week in, week out with this Jaguars team that say what you will about the offense. That defense of theirs, it looks to be for real. And the Bears are playing some decent football still, even with a rookie quarterback. Look, those two teams are built with defenses, and they're trying not to let their quarterbacks lose the games for them.
And
that's what's happened here. But hey, you know, the Steelers could they be 7-0 right now? Absolutely, they could be. Should fans take 5-2 with the team still not playing at their full potential? Hey, I think so.
Yeah, the interesting thing is the Steelers the past 2 weeks have played some of the best football you can possibly play. There's no doubt for 38 minutes against Kansas City that they played almost perfect football. You'd like a little bit better stuff in the red zone. And then this week, tip your hat to the Bengals in terms of Andy Dalton and at least the offensive line holding up in the first half. The Bengals made some plays, and the Steelers looked really good offensively. Again, didn't kind of convert at the end of the half on a couple red zone opportunities. And then the Steelers defense played a picture perfect kind of you can't do it better type of half in the second half, just like they did against Kansas City in the first half. You put those two halves together, I mean, that's almost perfect football. I think the Chiefs had 6 yards in the first half last week, and the Bengals had 20 yards here in the second half. I mean, that's just unbelievably good. The offense, again, they didn't convert third downs at all. The defense put him in good field position, something that never happened last year, by the way. Remember that? How Dave and I were talking all the time about the Steelers defense never giving the offense short fields. Well, they gave them shorter fields a couple times in this one, and then the offense, they didn't do much with it. But they did enough to come out with a very comfortable win. I know, it felt like, particularly after the Chiefs game last week, that you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. You're waiting for the Bengals to hit a big play to A.J. Green or Mixon or whomever it is, and then all of a sudden it's a one-score game. Well, the frustration of the continual field goals was there, but the game was never in doubt in the second half. It was never a one-score game, and it was a comfortable win. Yeah, they can do a lot of things better, but it's – I'll take arguments for who is equal to the Steelers in the NFL right now. But when the Steelers playing well, I don't think anybody has the talent or the skill level of the Steelers in the league.
They had the talent, that's for sure. We could probably argue. I mean, look, the Patriots got a lot of talented players. The Chiefs got a lot.
And they did it last night. Everybody has the right to say, if you're a Patriots fan or if you're a Steelers fan, until the Steelers beat the Patriots are the better team. And that's fine. That logic to me works because the Patriots have owned the Steelers like the Steelers have owned the Chiefs.
Fair enough. And like we opened with, they are a talented team that is yet to play up to their full potential.
60 minutes.
Right, 60 minutes. And, you know, we're obviously going to get into the red zone stuff right now. That defensive performance in the second half, I mean, that just goes to show you sometimes. But here's the thing. What do we know about this Bengals offense coming into this game? We knew that Andy Dalton's Andy Dalton. A.J. Green is one of the best wide receivers in the league, and as long as you don't let him have fantasy day numbers on you, you're probably going to be in good shape. And their offensive line, look at what they lost during the offseason. Their offensive line is just, you know, it's middle of the pack in the league at best.
If they
lost Eifert, a huge weapon of theirs, a field stretcher. So it's A.J. Green or bust, it seems like, with them. And when you're able to take A.J. Green out of the picture, and you don't let a guy like and you know, there's a lot of talk about Mixon heading into this game too. But as I said, I think during one of the shows last week, David, he's been kind of hit and miss. You know, he really hasn't had a high successful run rate. And I think you saw all you had to see about what maybe the Bengals kind of think about Mixon right now. They opened the game up with Jeremy Hill in the backfield. I mean, come on, really? And, you know, and I still don't think they're using Giovanni Bernard.
This has been my complaint for three straight years. If you're a Bengal fan, you got to be killing yourself. Gio carried it three times and caught one pass for minus 1 yard. I mean, we've seen Gio tear the Steelers apart, you know, for a half at a time over the last 3 years. And he came into the league the same time as Le'Veon Bell, so we know how long he's been around. He was taken ahead of Le'Veon Bell, right? He was the one back taken ahead of Le'Veon Bell. If I remember, Dave, I'm doing this off the top of my head, but didn't he go 40 and Le'Veon Bell go 48 in that draft? They were the first two guys taken, and Gio can't get on the. You know, I don't get it. We even heard our guest on Wednesday said Paul Daner said, you know, they got to use Gio more. Didn't happen.
You know, the thing with him too, and I hate to turn this into Bengals Depot here, but you know, he's under contract through the 2019 season. I think talking about Bernard and, you know, salaries of like 3.1 next year and 3.4 million. The Bengals are having to pay a lot of guys right now. And you would think that the way he's not getting used, in my opinion, up to what his salary is. And now they have Mixon in there. I guess what I'm getting at is I wouldn't be surprised if Bernard's out of Cincinnati before his contract's up. And because of that, you know, I think Bernard would be a great, you know, assuming Le'Veon
Steeler?
Bell. In so many words. Now, assuming, obviously, that Le'Veon Bell's not there because, you know, Le'Veon Bell's all these running backs into one. But I think you could turn Bernard into a good third down kind of piece of the puzzle that are at a very affordable price. I've always liked Gio Bernard, but yeah, back to the original point. I don't think they're using him properly. They've got a three-headed monster and they don't know how to use it. I don't think they're, but back to the original point was it's just that offense is A.J. Green. And if he's not clicking, that seems to be it with them. And the Steelers were effective in the second half of taking them away. You get Andy Dalton in those second and long and third and long situation, and he crumbles like one of those coffee cakes.
Yeah, a couple of – so Gio went 37th. He was the first back taken. You know, just think about how the draft – sorry. Depending on what you want to call Tavon Austin, we all thought of him as a receiver when he was drafted. So the you think about how, you know, running backs were devalued at a period of time, and now the thought I think is a little bit different in terms of getting a guy and using a guy up right when they come out of college if you have good backs to take them early. And we've seen, you know, big success with Ezekiel Elliott, David Johnson won the first round pick, but Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott, of course this year Leonard Fournette, and then Bell was the second back taken at 48. So you think about guys who went running backs later in that round was Monty Ball and Eddie Lacy, and then Christy Michael. Those are the guys who went through the second round, and you know, no question who the most successful back of that group has been, and not even a conversation. So one last thing, people talked about the Bengals line, and you think, you know, this team screws things up, and what, you know, why didn't they foresee this? They did. You remember a couple of years ago, the Bengals went out and used their first two picks on two offensive linemen when they didn't have a place to play them. And the thought was, you know, this is a team that's close. Why would you go draft, you know, position, you know, guys who are going to be backups? Well, it takes a little time maybe to get into the nuances of playing offensive line in the NFL. And they knew they were going to lose these guys. The problem is they didn't draft well. They didn't pick the right guys. And now they lose the two guys last year. They knew they were going to lose Whitworth. But when Zeitler left, you know, that was a big hole to fill. And it's been a mess ever since. So really last year and this year, you know, that's been their issue. So, okay, so let's get to the team that we're supposed to be talking about, Dave, and the Steelers. And let's start with the injury report. I talked about it up top. Vance McDonald apparently had his knee banged up. He was supposed to return, which would suggest that it wasn't, you know, a serious season-ending type injury. But I don't think he did return. It's the only one Mike mentioned. And, you know, in terms of the inactives, we saw pretty much as we expected, although Stephon Tuitt's whole thing was a surprise and Vince Williams was able to go. But I think you hit the inactives and maybe the question about Brian Allen or Xavier Grimble, but the inactives were as expected.
Yeah, so probably a good thing they dressed Grimble, you know, all said and done. Of course, you never know how injuries in a game is going to play out. But, I mean, by Saturday, we had a good idea who six of the seven were going to be. Then it became a question of Grimble or Brian Allen. So, you know, Stephon Tuitt, you know, Mike didn't mention him during his press conference on Tuesday. And then, lo and behold, he crops up on the injury report on Wednesday, doesn't practice the rest of the week, ruled out on Friday, you know, with Marcus Gilbert. Look, there's no reason to rush Marcus Gilbert back right now. So, hopefully after the bye week, he, you know, after he's had another 3 weeks there, he's good to go. Tuitt, we'll see. I mean, who knows? You know, if hopefully he'll be back for this game against the Lions. I'd almost be tempted, David, to now obviously it's not, well, we're going, you know, if he's healthy, he's going to play, obviously. But, you know, it wouldn't, I guess, hurt my feelings if he wasn't 100% and had to, you know, not able to play against the Lions and then had the bye week to rest up and then hit the second half, you know, fresh and ready to go there. So, McDonald, we'll see what happens to him. I'm still trying to find out exactly when he kind of dinged his knee or whatever. So,
yes, yeah,
so
sometime in the third quarter. I think, or at least that's when it was reported. So who knows exactly when it was, but
right.
Okay. So let's get into the game a little bit from the beginning. The Steelers win the toss as the Bengals call tails and it was heads and the Steelers get the ball and take the ball. Something we haven't seen much from Mike Tomlin. Any thought as to how Mike makes those decisions or why he might've made that decision? Because as we know, the Steelers defense has been very good at not letting other teams score. In fact, I don't think other teams have scored on their opening drive all season. And at the same time, the Steelers haven't scored a touchdown on their opening drive all season until yesterday when they went right down the field. Any thought as to what Mike thinks about?
Yeah, I don't know. I think probably something psychological with, you know, the old we have confidence in you and we're trying to show you that we do. Here's the ball. Yeah.
right.
I think there's a book entitled just what I just said, you know.
Right. So, you know, right down the field in a just, I mean, look, there was, I mean, what are you going to say? That's, you want to draw a drive up. They faced a 3rd and 5 right out of the chute after 2 and 3 yard gains. So they gave the ball to Martavis Bryant on the first play. And lo and behold, Dave, I mean, more or less, that's all we saw of Martavis Bryant, and that, we'll get into that shit show as well. I mean, there's no other way to talk about it. But I think everybody's like, oh, you know, they're going to cater to Martavis Bryant now that he or his agent or his girlfriend or whomever kind of the greasy wheel, you know, gets the squeaky wheel gets the grease. But it didn't really work out that way.
Yeah, it's more like the greasy wheel that got the squeak, I guess, right now.
got to squeak some more.
That report. How bad? Look, I shouldn't do this, but it's one of my. I shouldn't take a shot at him, but because he's so easy, low hanging fruit. But how Ian Rappaport is so bad at his job. If I was as bad at my job, which some of you out there probably think I am, as Ian Rappaport is, how in the heck is that guy drawing a paycheck?
So the question is, if you're Ian Rappaport and your whole world depends on kind of sources, now sources being agents, maybe being coaches at different times, being front office personnel, how do you vet that? Because you're never going to get a second source. So you go with it and it's right 8 out of 10 times, and the other 2 times you look stupid. I generally agree with you. At the same time, I don't know what you do. Do not report that, and then it happens. You look dumb for not reporting it. I mean, he clearly is. I mean, sometimes you got to just like the Ben trade rumor is the most obvious one. Sometimes you got to kind of, you know, you got to kind of sense it, suss it out. But he was right about the. I don't know if he broke it or who broke the Martavis thing, but whoever broke that was right about it. I mean, clearly somebody did say something. So I'm with you. He looks dumb sometimes, but I'm not sure. You know, they don't get to second source stuff like newspapers make guys do. So,
and I understand why they do it. I mean, the masses with major yep. media. You know, it might be hard to believe, David, but there's probably Steeler fans out there that don't even know what Steelers Depot is. You know,
believable, unbelievable.
God bless them.
they live in a virgin, pristine world.
I know that's hard for people to believe, but yeah, I mean, look, what did you think when you read that report?
You know, honestly, I didn't see it. I had a couple things I was doing I don't know when it came out. But I was deeply engrossed in the 1 o'clock games, and I knew I was going to be doing that, so I didn't spend a lot of time on Twitter from 11 to 1, which is when I assume it came out.
Yeah, it was early in the morning that he had reported that. And look, it's my obligation to pass that along to my readers, but at the same time, we kind of soft news it. You know, where it's a tidbit, you know, kind of with an opinion added on to it. So, you know, my thought was, yeah, we'll see. You know, this is a guy that's lost touches to Juju the last several weeks, and there's no sign that he's not, you know. Here's where it went wrong with him, with Rappaport saying he wouldn't be subbed out. Come on, that's a little strong there. But, okay, back to the game.
Martavis Bryant
gets a first carry, and you think, okay, yeah. maybe the wheel, squeaky wheel, is getting the grease.
Yeah, see you later. So then the play that kind of opened the game up, and really the game rolled for the Steelers from this point, is after Bell gets 3 yards, Ben drops back, doesn't have his first read, and you look, and it's I mean, there's no other way to say it. It's a blown coverage by the Bengals. Nobody goes with Le'Veon Bell out of the backfield running a little cross as the safety valve, and we haven't seen it all season. And I didn't actually look this up, although I tweeted it at the time that I thought it was his longest reception of the year at 23 yards. He ended up only having 3 catches, but he had one that was longer later in the game. And the offense just rolled from there. I mean, Ben, on the next pass Ben made, I think it was one of his two best plays he made in the game, the 16-yarder to Antonio Brown, because it's something we haven't seen much of this year, Dave, is it was AB was his third read. A, we haven't seen Antonio Brown be anything but the primary read almost all season. And B, he went right, he went left, and he came back to Antonio Brown in the middle of the field and completed a pass for 16 yards. Very impressive stuff right there, I thought.
Oh yeah, this is by far his best game of the season, without a doubt. I mean,
certainly his best half of the season.
Yeah, and I'm watching that play, right? I got that play pulled up right now, the Antonio Bryant play. But and look, the touchdown pass.
Antonio Bryant, man, we got some Pitt in the 2000 football.
We're screwing this all up. to Antonio Brown, that touchdown pass to Antonio Brown as well too was a ball that needed to be placed where it was.
Great throw.
Kind of low like that there, and that pass that you just referenced to Brown was one of those slat flants that we see quite a bit there, and Antonio Brown has a way of finding that open spot.
Did you just say slat flants?
What did I say? I'm
slat flants.
I'm going on very little sleep and a whole lot of coffee. Slant flat.
Yeah.
There you go. We've seen that quite a few times. I mean, that's a staple throughout the NFL, that combo there. I mean, what else is there to add about that first drive? I mean, you march down the field, you do what you're supposed to do, one for one.
We saw him run over the right side a couple times.
What's that?
We saw him run over the right side a couple times.
Yeah, my God, David DeCastro is playing. You know, after a bad game a couple of weeks ago, he's really put together some nice. There might not be a better pulling guard in the league.
Larry Little, man. I mean, he's playing great. And let's be honest about it. DeCastro got all the accolades he got 2 years ago he deserved. He didn't necessarily deserve the stuff he got last year. I think he'd be the first to tell you he didn't play his best football. And you're right. Was that the Bears game that he wasn't so good in? But, man, the past couple weeks, he's been dynamite.
I think it was a Jaguars game. He had a down Jaguars game.
Okay.
Then good game last week against the Chiefs, and then of course a good game. And Roosevelt Nix, boy, you want to talk about a guy? The fans got to get that guy to the Pro Bowl. Not only as a fullback, but special teams guy as well too. He's done it all season. He's done it really pretty much his whole career in Pittsburgh. And it's no wonder he's on the field as often as possible there. So I thought McDonald did some good things again in the first half on the move. The whole offensive line for the most part. Now, when in pass protection-wise, Alejandro Villanueva, boy, that Carl Lawson's something, right? That guy's going to have a lot of sacks in this league. He got Alejandro Villanueva at least twice with some long arm stabs where AV just let the shorter guy get into his body there, and he paid dearly for it. Carl Lawson's going to be a fun guy to watch. We knew that going up in the pre-draft process. He's a guy that, and obviously the Steelers paid a lot of attention to as well. And, Chris Hubbard had a little bit of his issues and pass protections on that other side, and we knew that was coming, probably as well. The rest of the line, of course, Pouncey, Foster, and DeCastro, as far as I can see, no major issues there. The tight ends, I thought, did their job. AB, obviously, a good game. Ben, probably his best game, or at least his best half of the season. Who else? Eli Good, what did he have? One catch and had some decent yak on that. Juju, what can you say about Juju? He's learned to play backyard bin ball.
Yeah, that is a great comment. I love it. Yes, I agree.
Even though that was, we think that was designed on that touchdown. If you haven't seen it yet, Alex has a great breakdown of that play, and it mirrors remember the touchdown play last year against the Chiefs to Darius Hayward?
DHB running just wide open through that side of the field at Heinz Field. I was going to bring that up. Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like.
And Alex has a great post about that this morning. So, much like we say Ben in college open and Ben backyard, there are elements there, though, where Juju seems to be at home when a play breaks down, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't have the first half, second half breakdown of Ben's numbers right in front of me, Dave. But, look, this is a game we've seen Ben throw the ball a lot at times. Ben only put it up 24 times in this game, so the targets were limited to guys. I mean, Antonio got his 10 targets, but he only had 4 catches. Now, they were significant catches, and the pass interference was a very big play as well. But, Bell 3 for 3, Schuster 2 of 3, Vance 2 of 3. Jesse didn't get a target in this game. Grimble 1-of-1 on third down play that got him a yard short. Eli Rogers only targeted twice, the first time he's been targeted since week 2 against Minnesota. And then Martavis got his 2 targets, and you know we'll get into some of that as well. Let's get to the end of the first.
Look, it shows you if you can run the football, success. You know, maybe we need to look at what is a successful play a little closer. Maybe the guys at Football Outsiders will do that again in the near future. Instead of 4.5 yards on first and 10, 4 yards. You know, because remember, go back to what Joe Thomas said a few weeks ago. Maybe that's the way we need to start looking. Because to be quite damn honest with you, I'm excited when Le'Veon Bell gets 4 yards on first and 10.
Joe Thomas is – so Football Outsiders has this, you know, kind of moving metric, and Joe Thomas was very simple. It's either get 4 yards, get a first down, or get a touchdown. And it's a little more simplistic, but it works. I really do think it works.
Yeah, and basically that's on any play, Joe Thomas is saying.
Right. So second and 12, it's not ideal, obviously, but still, I mean, you get the sense. In general, it's a good easy barometer of what to use.
Right, exactly. And maybe at worst, what we should think about is 40% of the needed yardage, on 40% or – you know, X, you know, first down, touchdown, whatever. But anyway, back to it. If you can get 4 yards on first down, man, it and you're doing it on the ground, it opens up. You know, at some point, and we saw this happen in this game, you're going to start – you could almost see the turning point in there, right, when they started to – where that Bengals defense just started – the switch flipped on them where they didn't want no more. You know, when you're able to consistently run the ball decent, that opens up the rest of your passing game and everything. That's why I think Ben had so many, areas. There were some instances they left a lot of meat on the bone by not converting some of those third and ones and fourth and ones. Maybe it's time to talk a little bit about that now.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that. I want to get into the end of the first half. Let's talk about this drive. The Steelers are up 17-14. The Bengals go 3 and out in 22 seconds. The Steelers do a really good job of using the 2 timeouts to make sure the Bengals have to punt and maximizing the situation for them getting the football. And the reality is they're getting the football with 1:28 left and 1 of their timeouts at their own 23. That's plenty of time. And so it's obviously a disaster. They run a kind of a screen to Bell, which he juggles. Turns out probably would have been better off, obviously, not catching it. He loses 7 yards. And me, Dave, and everybody else in the world who follows this team just assume they're going to run the wraparound draw. And unless that gains 15 yards, you're just going to kind of try and kneel out the half. And I'm shocked. I give the Steelers all the credit in the world for being, I think, out of character and being aggressive. And Ben throws that pass down the sideline to Antonio Brown, 23 yards. Tony Romo said it right. Defensively, you just can't let a guy get behind you on the sideline like that on a play where he can make that play. 2nd and 17, deep in their own territory, and they're 16. They convert that. That was as good a play as we've seen in a long time, Dave, in terms of just kind of surprise and execution.
Which one are you talking about there? I haven't memorized.
This is the last drive of the first half. Le'Veon Bell juggles the ball. They lose 7 yards, and it's 2nd down and 17. And Ben drops back and hits AB for 23 yards down the left sideline.
Oh, yeah. That whole shot there. Okay, yeah.
So huge play to get them out there. Then, you know, they kind of methodically drive down. And then the pass interference. So let's get to there's 12 seconds left. Ben goes deep. So they spike the ball. Look, I didn't like Look, I said they used their timeouts really well the first two. I didn't like that they didn't use their third one with when they catch the ball when Vance McDonald catches the ball for a first down at the Cincinnati 44. The clock runs down to 12 seconds. I think the Steelers really wasted an opportunity for clock management there. But they throw the deep ball to AB after the offside, Dave. That's pass interference, right? I saw a couple people in the media say, you know, that ball's uncatchable. Can't tell. No way in my mind you could tell that it's uncatchable. It wasn't thrown out of the end zone.
Yeah, I'll have to go see where that ball landed.
Right in the back of the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, you cannot not assume that he might not have got there, you know. With that guy, anything seems to be possible. But, yeah, I think you have to call that for sure. But before we even talk about this, let's make sure we give Juju Smith-Schuster some props on that first and 10 play with 48 seconds and him being able to shake the tackle, I think it was from Sean Williams, and get out of bounds. How big was that?
Yep. Yeah. Very good point there. That drive, the rest of the drive probably doesn't happen time wise, because Juju, you know, he didn't have enough to get the first down. So if he's inbounds, you can't really spike it there. It's going to be at least 15 more seconds off the clock. Yeah. Good call. Huge play.
All right. After here we are, first and 5 at the Bengals 5. Pass incomplete over to the right. McDonald had a drop. E-I-E-I-O.
Now I have to say, I think people were – this was not an easy catch. Is it catchable? Absolutely.
He's got to make that catch.
It was a back shoulder, and he's going the other direction. I thought Romo made it. Yes. Look, the answer is yes. He has to catch the ball. But it wasn't hit him. It wasn't Jackie Smith hit him in the hands and he dropped it. I mean, it was not an easy catch.
It was, as Romo said, the ball was placed where it needed to be placed.
Yes.
And
yes.
Does Heath Miller make that catch? I mean, it's not fair, but Heath Miller makes that catch.
Does James make that catch?
I think so. We've seen Jesse drop one or two in the end zone that he probably should have had. He's got to make that catch.
Okay.
If McDonald didn't have the recent the track history, maybe we're defending him a little bit harder.
Yeah. Fair enough. That's a fair point. Bengals call timeout. Steelers have second goal at the 5. Now, I haven't seen the definitive answer here.
Well, here's the thing now. They line up empty set.
With empty Bell. Set, Bell slot right.
Right, and then the Bengals call a timeout.
Okay.
Don't forget that in the setup.
Yeah, so the Bengals call timeout with 12 seconds left, and the Steelers come out and show the same setup. Bell, empty set, Bell slot right. And I've watched this play 10 times. And I don't know definitively the answer yet. I'm sure I would think we'll find out the answer. I know Caboli will ask today.
He's already answered it. Ben answered that during I'll read you that quote. I wrote about that early in the morning about Ben not being happy with that play.
Okay, so I'll tell you what I thought, and you tell me if I was wrong, because I haven't seen it. I thought, having watched it 10 times, that Ben did not audible out of what the play call was. Now, we've talked a million times about RPOs, run pass options, whatever. To me, I watched it. Ben is standing there. He's looking at the defense. There's not something that you would audible into a run play in my mind that's obvious there with the front the Bengals are showing. You don't audible into a run there. And there's no verbiage coming out of his mouth. Now, he does give a hand signal to Le'Veon to come back into the backfield, but I think that's just a cadence thing. Look, on this cadence, you're supposed to be moving back beside me. So just visually, Dave, everything I saw suggests that he did not audible into a run play. The run play was called. Okay, tell me if I'm wrong.
All right. And a lot of times you'll do that and bring a guy back because you want to see what –
Who follows whom?
Right, who follows? It's just like motion, you know. So, you know, telling if it's man or zone or whatnot. He said after the game during his post-game press conference, we had a pass play called and we had a really good look and then I'm not sure what happened. Now, even Roethlisberger's a little confused by how much time was after the game, but you can forgive him. He says the timeout or something happened and then we changed the play because we had a timeout. And Todd was just telling me that we have a timeout, so let's change the play. And I'm a little frustrated with that because I don't think that's the time and the place for that. You've got 7 seconds. I believe it was 7 or 8, whatever it was, with a timeout. That's at least 2 shots at the end zone, but we run the plays that are called. They must have saw something that thought we can get it. I hate to just get 3 points there. I think that's what is so frustrating about that particular series there. So here.
Okay, so I'm 100% in agreement with everything Ben said. So obviously they call it was run play by design. They ran it and then they screwed the time up part out. But the whole point is, look, I had some people debating with me on Twitter whether the run play is the right call. You run it, then you call timeout. You still have another shot. Here's the deal. You run it. Maybe the play gets strung out. Maybe Le'Veon Bell dances around a little bit and whatever, and you end up calling timeout 3 seconds left. If you throw it twice, you're guaranteed to get 2 plays off, almost certainly. Now, look, Ben could get – there are circumstances as well. Ben could get sacked, but he obviously understands the clock situation. It's a 3-step drop, take a read. If it's not there, throw it away. So you guaranteed to get 2 cracks. That's my argument why that call was insanely stupid.
Yeah, it's hard. It most definitely is hard to defend that call. But keep in mind, David, it was second down, right? So,
yep. And it was 12 seconds, not 7. The time they had.
Look, I'm not under hell. No way in hell. I'm trying to defend this. But obviously with 12 seconds, you can get, like you said, you should be barring a sack. You're going to get 2 pass plays off. At that point. And plus, you still have your timeout, too. God forbid you should suffer a sack, okay? My only thinking was they were thinking that they had 12 seconds, and if they got the look that they wanted, I would like to know if the look, how much freedom was Ben, if he saw X look, he has to run that running play. Or if he had liberty there, had he gotten another look to audible out of it? We're not going to get that kind of information, I don't think. I'm not sure.
I'm sure he has the liberty to audible out, but you would assume coming out of the sideline timeout and probably having a pretty good sense of what just generally what the Bengals are going to show, just because it's red zone defense. It would probably have to have been something extreme since the Steelers lined up with somewhat the same formation. They probably knew what they were going to see.
Here's the way I envision that after that Bengals timeout, that discussion going. Look, when we go out there, give them that same formation again, and if X lines up over X, if we see the same front, then motion, then bring Le'Veon Bell back in, and then let's run. The pull behind DeCastro here, because that's what we want, and I think that's exactly how it went down. And I think they did that with 12 seconds left, thinking that if this run play at most is going to eat up 5 seconds, either he's going to get in the end zone or he's going to get tackled within 5 seconds. We'll call a timeout with 7 seconds. We'll have one quick. We'll have that. That'll be enough time with 7 seconds to throw towards the end zone one time. And if that doesn't work out, we send out Boswell. That's the only thing that I think that they thought. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Let me ask you this.
Now, was it a bonehead? Absolutely, it was bonehead.
Yeah, it was bonehead play. So, if you're Dave Bryan or Mike Tomlin in that situation, how much time do you need to feel comfortable running a second play? You're running it with 8 seconds. You're running a second play, a pass play with 8 seconds for sure, probably with 7. When you get down to 6, are you still running the pass play? 6 or 5? Where's your cutoff?
Boy, that's like this is like name that tune, isn't it?
It's exactly what it is. I think 6 seconds is probably the cutoff for me.
Do you need that one extra note?
I think I would send. Certainly, I'm sending Boswell out with 5, and I'm not sending him out with 7. 6 is the one that I debate.
I guess it depends. If we're talking right where that ball was at the 5, I'm comfortable running a play with 6 seconds. I think, but no less than that. No way. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? can you imagine had they tried to run a play with, let's say, 7 or 6 seconds and got 0 points after running in that situation? You want to talk about mad on top of mad. Look, I mean,
so you know what I actually thought.
It was a bad call all the way around.
the thing I thought, and clearly it wasn't the case because we saw Mike arguing about it later, is I thought they ran the ball and it got to six, and they made a conscious decision to let it run to three so that there wouldn't be a kickoff or anything. Because you could conceivably kick the field goal with 6 seconds left and have a second left and have to kick off. So I thought when it, in real time when it was happening, I was like, what an idiot call to run the football. But okay, now you're screwed. Run it down to three. That makes sense. Now, obviously, it would have made more sense if they could have stopped it at seven. I don't know if they would have gotten stopped at seven. But, you know, how that all went down, obviously, the Steelers didn't handle it well. End of half, 20-14. And, boy, again, it's a little bit like some of the things in the Kansas City game, Dave. You can't play much better offensively. They had 251 yards. They didn't turn it over. I don't know that they had a penalty. They score on 4 out of 5 drives. They have 20 points. They hadn't scored 20 points and a half all season. But you go into halftime going, they got 20 points, but.
Yeah. Offense, yeah, fire everybody. I mean, once again, we've seen this quite a few times this year. They're able to move the football between the 20s, and when they the red zone continues to be a problem in there, and you're thinking, okay, they went one for, they opened up the game 1-for-1, and then 0-for-5 the rest of the way. They've got to figure it out. I mean, especially when they get down there, inside the 10. I mean, They've got to – you got to just come up with a bunch of two-point plays, and I realize you don't have a lot of time to practice those, but you've just got to have 4 or 5 of those plays a week in your pocket that you know. I mean, look at what the Bengals did to the Steelers on their second touchdown drive. I mean, that's flat-out knowing what your competition's going to do when they have X amount of personnel in there. The Steelers had Matakavich and L.J. Fort in that game. They showed them the same heavy personnel package that the Bears showed them way back week three there. And damn if they didn't leak the tight end out just the same, So you've got to be able to know that in a certain situation, you got to have a play that you can dial up to get you 2, 3, 4 yards. And, now I know it sounds easier. I mean, sounds simplified. I'm making it sound a lot more simplified than what it is. But you got to be able to start punching this thing in more, especially when you're inside the 10.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there. So just for give people perspective, last year in 2016, red zone percentage touchdowns, the leaders of the league – was 72%. It was the Tennessee Titans. By the way, they're 31st in the league this year. But so there's not a lot of consistency in this number in terms of year-to-year stuff. But the Titans led at 72%. The Packers lead this year at 73%. Okay, the last team in the league last year in red zone scoring percentage touchdowns was the New York Jets at 35%. This year, they're 9th in the league at 57%. Obviously, again, we're 7 weeks into the season, blah, blah, blah. But the range for everybody, I told you the Packers at the top at 73% and Arizona's last at 41%. So the range is pretty consistent. Last year, 72 to 35. This year, to this point, 73 to 40. That's roughly the same. So we'll just call 70 to 40 the range. And obviously everybody's in between there. And you can get a lot even more specific than that because Jacksonville's 5th at 60%. And so you get about a 20%, 25% range of where the bulk of the teams are. The Steelers are at 42%. They're 30th in the league. And in the last three games, they're at 18%. They've, yesterday they were 1 of 6, I think, in red zone touchdowns. That's obviously killing them. And at home, they're 23%. So, yeah, everything you said, spot on. They've got to do a better job. And so let's, before we get into all the good things about the defense, let's get into this third down situation that the Steelers have faced here. We saw it kind of, it was almost comical, drive after drive, get 2 or 3 on first down, get 6 or 7 on second down, face 3rd and 1 over and over again, and not convert any of them.
Yeah, it's almost like that has now, joined the red zone problem there. Look, I'm a fan of Nightmare Watson, the way he's been used so far, you know, during the season. But what did I say leading up to this game? I said if you get in a situation like that, the first time that you bring him into the game, you should run play action off that, I thought. Because, like it or not, every time Watson comes in the game right now, everybody knows who's getting the ball. So,
well, three for three.
Right, right.
And then he got stuffed in his first opportunity yesterday, so 3 for 4. And by the way, Twitter goes crazy saying, why are you giving the ball to him instead of Bell?
Well, you give it to him because he is 3 for 3 on the season.
Right, he's 3 for 3. Like, you decided, you know, like it or not, they decided it was, you know, back a couple of years ago when I couldn't believe that they were who they were taking off the field. I don't remember the exact situation, but D'Angelo Williams, they were using him as a third down back so that he would get in the game. And you'd see Mike use him once or twice early in the game and then not use him again. Well, we'll see what happens with Watson going forward. But
that first third and one with Watson was the ideal time to run play action because they were all keying on it. Now,
Was it fourth and one or third? Fourth and one?
Was it fourth? Maybe it was fourth and one.
That was the fourth and one where that he spun out and they had to remark it.
Right. My bad. I had to down. But the first, you know what I'm getting at. The first time he's in the game in a short yardage situation. In my opinion, that would have been the perfect time to run play action right there with him. If you're using that personnel package in the game. Now, the second time, what did they do? They ran play action, you know. He just didn't connect a good play over there on the right side by the defensive back on Juju. That was the ball that hit Juju in the hands, right?
Is that the one down the sideline?
Down the right sideline.
Yeah, that was a great play. As they said, they both fought hard for the ball. And you know, the easier thing is the defensive back doesn't have to catch it. He has to knock it down. So he made a good play. Juju got his hands on it. Was it Dre in that one? Wait a minute.
You know what? I think I got that wrong. I thought that was a short yardage situation there on that play.
I don't remember that as a short yardage, but I know the play.
It was a 3rd and 7, but I think what I thought Watson was in the game. I haven't memorized this second half yet. I've gone through the first half quite extensively. But that was an incomplete deep. That was a 3rd and 7 in that situation there. I don't know why I'm thinking that was a short.
It was another third down call where they went. So they went down the field. So there was the one where Dre sticks Antonio Brown on the line of scrimmage, does a very good job on a route that looks like it was an out and up, and he struggles in motion, I think, struggles to get off the line of scrimmage, throws the timing of that play off, bends back pedaling, throws it down the sideline. AB never has a chance at it, and you know, the fan base, I think, somewhat justifiably goes crazy. Dave, what I don't understand here is, there are two things. There are two obvious things that did. Look, this is not keen insight that I have. I'm sure you have it. I'm sure everybody who's listening has it. One is, when you're using Roosevelt Nix, you know, 30% of the time in the run game, and they're blowing holes open like crazy, I realize you might not always have time to run power to pull guys and do different things, but would it be bad to have a lead fullback? Okay, that's point one. So Rosie was never on the field for any of these short yardage plays. Point two is, good God, I don't mind throwing the ball, but does it have to be 40 yards down the field every time? I mean, how about a cross? How about, do a couple things differently so that it roll right, so you have a short and a deeper option, whatever you want. But, I mean, the idea that you have single man coverage on the outside, yeah, I get it, because you're not going to see that, and I don't mind that once in a while, but it doesn't have to be the home run ball every time. How about a high percentage pass to a guy running across? Or a little slant, which we didn't see much. I thought we were going to see a lot of that yesterday. We didn't see much of it. They didn't have to throw it much, but we didn't see much of that. So that's my issue with this.
To defend them there, and I battled this all early first part of the season here. People keep saying that, man, why does Ben got to keep throwing deep on third and short? Up until that first deep pass on third and short in that game, he had only thrown deep on third and short, and by short I'm talking 1 to 3 yards twice
And yeah, so let's be clear so we get the calls right. So there's the first time, you know, what that's when Tony Romo's talking about what they might do, and you know, they end up running to the right instead, and Le'Veon Bell gets nothing, right? Remember, he says they're going to do – Martavis Bryant goes in motion, and he says, no, they're going to end up running it to the right, and they kind of run, and it all gets backed up. So they get nothing, and they had A.B. man-on-man on the top. And then the second time, they do have the same look, A.B. man-on-man on the top, and they go to him in the end zone, and that's a question of was it pass interference or not. I thought that was just good defense by Dre. Yeah, he had his arm a little bit, but, you know, look, it's not going to be no contact all the time in the NFL, so – I thought it was a decent no call. Then the third time is Watson gets stuffed on fourth and one. The fourth time, he throws to A.B. down the sideline.
That's the play that Watson – that was the play action play to Watson, that one that you're just describing right there. That was the out and up by A.B. too.
Out and up, right. Where he never got off the line of scrimmage was really the killer there.
Right, and that messed kind of the timing up in that situation, yeah.
So the first one, Le'Veon Bell loses 4 yards. The second one, as I mentioned, going through this, it's third and one. He goes deep to A.B. in the end zone, and it was actually Willie Three Sticks gets him. William Jackson was the one who broke it up. That's the second one. The third one, they turn it over on downs because Watson gets stuffed on the challenge at the end of the third quarter. Steelers did a nice job of running the clock out and at least having a chance. So now, Dave, the question was asked to me, when you had that chance now, you had the whole extended time to decide whether to go for it, you had the change of quarters, would you have purposely burned a timeout to get an extra half yard on the Xavier Grimble spot when you had time to think about it for 5 minutes over the course of the two plays? Or is that just too much of a crapshoot to worry about that?
About going for it in that situation?
No, they went for it, but you know the Xavier Grimble mark.
Right.
You know, whether that was spotted correctly. They didn't challenge that. So the Steelers had 40 seconds and then the whole third quarter to think about challenging that to get an extra half yard. Is that in your mind, in hindsight, just knowing what you know now, is that something that's a good thing to do as a coach, or that's for a half yard for a timeout, that's not worth it there?
No. Until you brought it up, it didn't cross my mind.
Yeah, somebody brought it up to me. I agree. I don't think it was really worth it. So they go for it on fourth and one. He doesn't make it. Then the next time is when they go deep to Antonio Brown. They don't make it. The next time they have a third and one, they draw him offside. How about that when they got Carlos Dunlop to jump?
Boy, Ben's become a master of that.
Almost as good as Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I mean, what did he get him, two or three times in this game to jump?
Two times. And he was mad. He was hot that he didn't get the free play. But what happened is I think Vance McDonald moved. And so the play did not go on sequence, and I think that's why they blew it dead.
Okay.
And then you were talking on that same series, the next third down is when they go deep to Juju. So that's the third down there. And then the last time they just nailed it out. So, you know, they didn't convert any of the third and shorts. They had, you know, third or fourth and shorts. They had four chances. The fifth chance they get a drawn offside is the only one they converted. And then the last one they have is the pass to Juju down the sideline.
And what we were screaming for a lot early in the season, boy, if this team could just get into some third and less than six, third and six situations, everything would be just fine. Wrong.
It's just not, for a team that showed so much in 2-point conversions and creativity in short yarded situations, they certainly haven't. So give me your thoughts. One, third and short, who do you want to be the back on the field?
Yeah, Le'Veon.
Do you want Rosie Nix on the field?
Yeah.
Is there any room for James Conner in any of this stuff?
Man, if you're going to pass, do you want him pass protecting right now?
No, I don't. I just, you know, they made the decision.
If you're running, I have no problem with him running back, being back there running.
Yeah. I mean, would you, if you had a choice today, I mean, James Conner hadn't gotten a lot of opportunities, but you got to say when he's run the football, he has run the football effectively. If you have a choice between James Conner and Watson back there on third and one, who would you put back there tomorrow?
James Conner and Watson?
Yeah.
On third and one?
Yeah.
Just because people know it's coming when Watson's back there, I'd be more apt to put, one failed play doesn't, change my mind about the player. But, Connor just gives you the ability to do maybe a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel the same thing. I'm not condemning Watson, but Connor shows more versatility and he's more agile. I'm with you. If you want, the one thing you know about James Conner is he's going to hit that hole hard. You know, the concern about Le'Veon and the first time he lost 4 yards, not blaming it on him, he didn't have a hole. But, obviously in short yardage situations like that, Le'Veon's skill is patience, sitting in the hole, finding the crease, and getting 7 yards. But when you need one, you need one. So you want a guy who's going to blast it in there, and that's why they're using Watson, obviously. But Conner maybe can do that and maybe give you more versatility.
All right, defense.
Let's talk about the defense. Okay, so the defense in the first half, they played badly, or did Dalton Bengals play great?
I thought Dalton made some great throws. Everybody's gonna be screaming because that happened in front of Mike Mitchell, but
it was a great throw.
It really was a great throw. And what about the one over to the left sideline?
That was AJ, right?
That was AJ, and Artie Burns thought he had a pick going the other way.
That one. Yeah, now that one, man, Artie's had like 3 or 4 of those in his career already where he's just he's there, but the ball's a foot over his head, and he ticked it. So there was that, and then there was one on the right sideline down by the goal line. Was that AJ too that he threw it in there and really nice throw to get him down to the 2 or so?
I don't remember. Was that I don't know if that was LaFell or Core. I don't remember in that situation there. But, it shouldn't be hard to pick out these A.J. Green receptions. What do we say? We said just don't let that guy have a fantasy football day, and you should be fine. But you hold a guy like that to 3 receptions for 41 yards and 6 targets. I mean, that somebody deserves a cake or something.
I didn't feel like going into halftime I was looking at specific defenders or specific plays, and like we did against Kansas City, and saying this guy screwed this up. I felt like the Bengals made plays. I mean, the touchdown, the guys were in the right spot. The guy made a perfect throw into a very small window. That pass to A.J. Green. Yeah, okay, already, took a shot. Maybe if he plays it the other way, he can knock it down. But the point is the Bengals made some good plays. Mixon ripped off a couple good runs. That's maybe the one thing you can point to is, they had a couple long runs against him. But I didn't feel like I was looking at guys on the defense and saying, these guys are screwing it up.
Well, their longest pass completion, I think, was 22 yards to Erickson, right?
That was easy pitch and catch in the middle of the field. Why don't more teams do that, man?
Right. Oh. And then their longest run was that 25-yard run by Mixon kind of early in the game, right?
Yep.
And then Sean Davis had kind of overran that. I mean, it was a breakdown. You got to take your hat off.
Yeah, Sean Davis didn't fill the right hole. That's right. That was maybe the one play where I looked and said, so Cam's sitting in the hole thinking he's going to make the play, and the lineman, I think the tackle comes down on him, so he's out of it. And then both safeties had kind of stepped up maybe a little bit to Cam's left or were moving to Cam's left, and it was off to the races.
I mean, credit Mixon. I mean, that's what he's there for, right? I mean, those kind of cutbacks. So, look, this defense gave up 2 explosive plays. If I would have told you before the game start, David, that you could buy 2 explosive plays for...
Yeah, that's a winner. It's $100. Buy it.
Yeah, you were buying it then, and everybody listening would as well there, as well. So, they were able to get pressure with some 3 and 4 man rushes. The timeliness of sending guys off the edge, I thought, was good. Those early hits on Dalton, don't think they didn't add up. Like on the flea flicker, and seemed like there was one other one early in the game.
Somebody thought that flea flicker should have been pass interference. That was T.J. Watt live action. That was clean.
Yeah. Don't think that those kind of things don't add up in a quarterback's head. And then late in the game, when you get, it just goes to show you, when you get teams in predictable situations, you can do a lot of things. What about the Chickalo deflection. They ended up scoring on that drive anyway, but Chicolo getting a hand on that football to CJ Uzomah. That was key.
Tough spot right there when you got to decide, do I rush the quarterback? Do I drop into coverage? He got the best of all worlds. He kind of was no man's land and got a hand on it.
As the game, they did a good job of creating tight windows with those zone drops with Andy Dalton. He really was never comfortable, and essentially led to two interceptions.
My God, they got a chance to tee off. They get the first interception. Not a great – you know, Dalton came out, and he was a different guy in the second half for whatever reason. The Bengals were a different team offensively. They don't run the football. We heard Joe Mixon squawk about it after the game, and you know what? I think he's got a legitimate beef. You know, wants the ball, sees Le'Veon get it for 35 carries. He gets it for 7. I don't know how many – I don't think he touched it in the second half. They come out the very first play of the second half. It's the first bad throw of the game by either quarterback. Dalton throws a terrible ball to the sideline. And then from then on, he wasn't good. And
what about
the past AJ?
What about that fourth down?
Oh, well, right.
I know it was over at that point. But
it wasn't. But let's go through the interceptions. The one, AJ Green's a little out in front. Joe Hayden picks it off his back. Dave, thoughts on Joe Hayden? We have not talked about Joe Hayden much this year, much on the podcast. We haven't said hardly anything about him. I mean, you know what, like what Mike says is, if you're not talking about my cornerbacks, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, Russian coverage. Look, I mean, he's been good. But let's not I see some hyperbole floating around.
Yes, I did. That's why I asked, because a couple people put him in the Hall of Fame, Steelers Hall of Fame last night.
Yeah, some writers are going a little bit over the top as well, too. Look, he's been
doing
good.
What's asked. He's been an upgrade.
Right. Just keep playing like that. There's not going to be any issues, I don't think. So,
Sean Davis, okay. Mike Mitchell, didn't see him the whole game. I don't know that we heard Mike Mitchell's name the whole game. Well, the second interception, Sean Davis made the play. Will Gay, right man, right spot, but he didn't return it for a touchdown. What's going on with that?
Yeah, look, I mean, we've talked in the past. Why can't the Steelers get these balls that bounce up in the air for the interceptions? And now we're kind of getting those, you know. So
I mean, you know, Will Gay, he's pick six king. So, you know, that was a huge disappointment. He was looking for it, man. He was trying to stay on his feet, finding what he could do.
You think Steelers Nation hates him now? Wait until he becomes the defensive backs coach in a couple more years.
Mike Hilton, another solid game. How about the Steelers had 4 sacks in 5 plays late? Things, you know, this field goals keep adding up. We won't even talk about Boswell. He was fantastic, as always. The 49-yarder was good from 65.
What about the fake punt call?
Okay, so yeah, let's go to the insane. That's just look. I sit here all the time for 8 years, and I've said, look, the only way people judge trick plays is if they work or don't. That's not the way to judge them, whatever. And I'm generally in favor of trick plays. That was insane. The only way the Bengals get back in the game is if that play doesn't work. Now, it worked perfectly. They saw what that Golden sees, nobody out on the gunner on the right side. He's conditioned to audible in. My God, if you watched it, if I showed you that play, sequencing it, show you a still of the setup with the guy open out run out to the right, and then I show you a still of Robert Golden releasing the ball in the heave that he was going to throw up, you'd be like, oh my God, what a disaster that was.
And let's not forget who was on the other end of it too.
Yeah. Well, it looks so bad the way he's delivering the football, and it could not have been a better pass. And DHB looks like he's got the softest hands in the world.
You just knew a drop was coming there, didn't you?
I was too shocked to even have any thought go through my mind that, oh my God, they're throwing the football here on this play. And as it has been pointed out, how about Tony Romo pointing out that Robert Golden had more passing yards in the second half than Andy Dalton?
Ooh, and that I think he had 107-something quarterback rating after that that throw. Look, I get it, and I just, you know, Mike talked a little bit about it after the game and all, and, you know, we trust Robert Golden in those situations, yada, yada. Is there some sort? There's got to be some sort of signal he gets there, right? Or is that? I mean, is that all? Just Robert Golden sees that, and he has the liberty to make that call. I mean, is it?
I got to think if I'm Danny Smith, it has to be. Hey, Robert, if we're up more than two scores in the second half, you're not allowed to run a. You're not allowed to run a fake.
I mean, I just wonder if it's just as simple as it's a key that Robert Golden calls that, and that's it, you know.
I'm sure we'll hear more about it. I don't know if they'll give it away. Obviously, they didn't send him out and say, you know, look for this. It's if you know, and they leave the gunner out there. You know, you're kind of asking for it, and Steelers, you know, they did it. It's good on them. And Caboli said that they practiced this play in for the past 3 weeks in practice, so they weren't unprepared to potentially run it.
That looked like a punt, pass, and kick. Pass.
Keep it up there. Just, dead spiral right on the money, though.
I mean, a shot put type of thing there.
Now, let's talk about Dalton's pass. Look, I have to say, I have tons of respect for quarterbacks who stand in there. I made a point of saying it about Case Keenum when the Steelers played him. He was taking some crap. Man, Case Keenum played fine, and he got crushed. Andy Dalton was getting a crap beat out of him. 4 sacks in 5 plays. Bud Dupree was coming out of a cannon on the left side or the stunts. I mean, nobody was touching Bud Dupree. Mixon didn't know what, you know, Mixon looked like he was in slow motion, you know, not getting his head around and finding the guy to block. But it's fourth down. It's the last play that you're going to, you know, it's a fourth down play. You can't throw it away. The guy wasn't about to hit you. And it wasn't like, oh, you rolled right and all the play was sequenced to the left, so there were no receivers there. There were receivers there. Or do this. Throw it 50 yards in the air straight up in the middle of the field and let it be a jump ball. You can't throw it. It's kind of a chicken shit play, Dave.
Yeah, you got to give your chance. You got to at least give your chance, your team a chance, right?
Yeah.
That's Andy, right?
That was a bad play.
That's a bad play. All right, Martavis.
So for those who didn't see it, I saw it, and Dave, I didn't actually go to the Instagram post, but just wanted to recap it for.
Yeah, he went on some fantasy football Instagram page and was responding to comments made about him and. You know, in so many words, Juju's not better than I am. If they give me what I want, you can have Juju and whatever else.
Which he then kind of backtracked from.
Right.
Saying Juju's great player. I just want to get mine.
Right. I just want to get mine. Yeah, he tried to step it back.
It's so dumb to say that first stuff. I mean, which is now, this, you know, ever since draft day, this has been going on.
Yeah, he. I mean, and then how much of it's true? Jeremy Fowler later, much earlier in the morning, says source Martavis wants out, and this is a wide receiver that this past week denied that he had wanted out. Yada. No, okay. Forget what.
Jeremy Fowler reiterated it on Sunday morning.
No, this morning.
Oh, this morning. Okay, I didn't see it this morning. Okay.
He says, from Jeremy Fowler, he wants out, a source close to Bryant said, point blank.
Yeah, okay, it's not going to happen. I mean, you know what? Okay, if somebody calls the Steelers tomorrow and offers them a second-round pick, they'll move Martavis Bryant, maybe.
But we know that's not going to happen. What about, look? I've thought I thought and prayed about this, and if I drank, I'd drink about it too. If someone offered you a fourth right now,
well, that's probably the borderline that I think the Steelers would consider it. I'm not taking anything worse than that. And the question to me is: this is a Super Bowl contending team. How important is Martavis Bryant in getting you there? Meaning, can Justin Hunter, DHB, be adequate fourth receivers? I mean, look, there's so much more room for Eli Rogers. Juju can play more snaps. But Martavis Bryant, I don't give a damn, you know, what he's actually done. If you don't respect him, there's a problem on the field. So I just think he brings too much to the table with too good a football team here to do this. And if you play out the season and you want to move him at the end of the year, is the pick going to be much different? I mean, you're probably going to get You could probably get a sixth for him next year if you want to, or in the offseason. So between the fourth and the sixth and having him for the rest of the season in the playoffs, I'm not moving him.
You know what? I'm considering it now.
What happened on that play? What happened on the play down the left? Did that impact your view of him? Because that was bad.
It's easy to make that fit a narrative. Okay.
It sure as hell is. How does that happen?
And that's what's going to happen. I've got to see the all 22. All we see is just a team. I just posted that on my timeline, along with a slowdown version of that on Twitter. It's knowing what we know this morning, going back and looking at that play and looking at Ben's reaction, it's easy to fit that into your narrative. And we don't know if the lights got him. It's easy to make that fit your narrative, whatever you want, read into that what you will. Let me say this, David, you made a great point. Look, his snaps have decreased. Juju seeing more time. Can a combination of Justin Hunter and DHB kind of give you what Bryant has given you so far?
Yeah, the answer is production-wise, yes. Is the answer you're going to get the same respect from the defense? I don't think so. I mean, production-wise, they haven't done anything. So, yeah, of course, it's easily replaced. And both those guys, you know, Hunter has the size, DHB has the speed. So, you know, in some combination, you know, they can fill the role. But, you know, we've seen what
this, look, this is – he could have four touchdowns in this game against Detroit. Okay, four touchdowns, 200 yards. This isn't going away.
The issue's
not going away.
Well, if he has four touchdowns, you know, if he has two touchdowns and 110 yards against Detroit, it's not going to be front burner. But the problem is the trade deadline's front burner, so it's front and center. And once the deadline passes, it goes away because it's just
right. But his bitching won't.
Well, if his bitching gets to the point, then you just don't dress him. And you know, look, there's no point in him bitching after the trade deadline. And somebody should be smart enough. Maybe his agent should be smart enough to say, look, the best thing for you to do now is to play good football, because if you want anything good to come in the offseason or anything different, you got to go out and produce, because you haven't, and now the trade deadline's gone. So you got to contribute.
And look, AR2 came out on Thursday saying we're not trading Martavis. I mean,
which is probably as close to the word of God for the Steelers as you're going to get.
But should they?
I think his upside is too great for the value you're going to get. I mean, you know, so his value goes down a little bit in the 8 weeks and in the playoffs that you keep him. What if he plays great?
Okay, but look, I don't want to drag this out. But what is his value? The respect factor.
It's also the possibility of the production factor. You don't really have the possibility of the big production factor with DHB and Hunter. You do with Martavis.
You have it sort of with Hunter, but not obviously not to the degree of Bryant. I mean, let's face it. Hunter is a you go deep, okay, and that's it. Bryant.
Well, so is DHB.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, and Bryant. Right. You're not going to get anything slant. Now, Bryant is one step better than that because he can give you post. And catch the ball on that.
Yeah, look, I guess you know the bubble screens or the whatever you want to call them haven't been that effective, but he's probably gives you a little bit more there. But yeah, we're in agreement.
You know, is he worth the headache? I mean,
well, I don't think it's a distraction. Obviously, the guys in the locker room had to deal with it this past week. It wasn't a distraction. I don't think it's going to be a distraction this week either.
I still don't think he's traded for obvious reasons. I mean, and that's an easy to go come out and say that still. But
right.
But with that said, with 1 week until the trade deadline, I'm definitely answering calls. And I got to be honest with you, if I could get a fourth or a fifth right now, I would consider it, David. And the thing is, you know, when you look at
it. Would you do it? I wouldn't do it.
I think I would for a fourth, to be quite honest with you.
All right.
Maybe my mind changes by, Wednesday when we do this, do another show, but I would consider it. Heck, you got a fit for San Antonio. Now, I know, you know, a little bit different circumstances, or is it? You know, he was facing a suspension, obviously, but, you know, I got to be quite honest with you. That guy's a ticking time bomb. Plain and simple, well, he's a ticking time
bomb. It sure feels that way. That's for sure. Okay, yeah. So let's wrap this up. Jordan Berry got to do a little better. We haven't talked much about him, but, you know, the first punt of the game, 39 yards. He's deep in – Steelers are deep in their own territory. You know, that's a chance to unload the leg a little bit. We haven't – you know, I've been a big fan of our special – the Steelers special teams. These guys have been fantastic. Last year they were both great. Boswell continues to be great. Jordan Berry has not been as good as he needs to be. Fair?
Yeah, fair. Seems like we're talking about other teams' kickers more than we are about our own punter, you know, Huber. And
it's good when he only has to kick twice. I mean, look, he had a 51-yarder and a 39-yarder, so, you know, one good punt, one not good punt.
What was Jesse James so mad at Danny Smith at the end of the half? You had two very different things. You have two different things going on. You have Roethlisberger jawing
with Mike,
and at the same time, you have Jesse looking like he wanted to pound Danny Smith into the ground there.
I did not see the video of Jesse and Danny, and I can't even imagine what it was about, to be honest with you.
And I think David DeCastro trying to play peacemaker a little bit between those two.
Do you have any idea what it was?
Not a clue. I told you before we went on the show, there was so much work that I had to do last night and crap the way through that I got the first half evaluation real good, and the second half not so much. So I apologize that I missed some down and distances maybe there. I'll clean that up. I'll own it and I'll clean it up. I'll clean that up by Wednesday, because I will have watched it 10 times by Wednesday there. Look, they won. They won big. They're leading the AFC North. It's going to take a major collapse for that not to happen now. They lead the AFC. You know, they still haven't played, you know, as you said, a complete game on really on both sides of the ball. So there's room to improve here. They get a Lions team coming off of a bye. Don't slip up here. Whatever you do, don't slip up here. Take care of business in Detroit on the road. Go into your bye week, and then, boy, you're really setting up for a nice second-half run due to the quarterback situation that we talked about really last week. Looks like no Luck. Looks obviously no Aaron Rodgers. You know, it's Tom Brady and who? Deshaun Watson, you know?
Right.
The second half of the season there, so... We can bitch, and we will. That's what we're supposed to do. But 5-2, seven games in, and leading the AFC and the AFC North, not bad. So let's get it, David. We've run long. Let's get after this a little bit more on Wednesday, when we'll have a beat writer who covers the Lions on the show. Hopefully, you and I will clean up the rest of the Bengals game. Mike will have talked on Tuesday. Ben will have talked on Tuesday. I doubt we're gonna have trouble finding anything to talk about there. So in the meantime, follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button upper right navigational bar. Thank you, David.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.